Okay, welcome to the Wednesday night Brain Picker Pro teleconference, live from Charlotte, North Carolina, and Greenville, South Carolina. I got that right, didn't I, John?
Well, actually, Spartanburg County.
Inman, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Live tonight on the teleconference is a friend of mine, fellow investor, and business owner, is John Edwards with Assurance South in Inman, South Carolina. Welcome to the program, John. How are you?
I'm doing great, Larry. Thanks for the invitation. I'm really looking forward to talking with you tonight.
Oh, yeah, man. It's going to be really exciting. Well, you know, you and I have talked about doing this a little bit in the past and doing some other things together. In fact, we swapped some links on our website. So, you know, before the night's over, you know, I want you to be able to give out all, not only your contact information, but also because you have a couple of websites that are for investors, don't you?
Yeah, but aside from the home inspection website or the site for the home inspection company, I also started just as really kind of a free service, a classified ad site called UpstateInvestor.com.
Uh-huh.
for investors in the upstate of South Carolina and western North Carolina to advertise properties that they have for sale.
Yeah, that's a really neat service. And I appreciate it whenever you contacted me and asked me to submit a couple of articles, as well as you even put a little banner ad up there for me to direct people over to our site, and I really appreciate that.
Well, always looking for submissions from, you know, seasoned investors or lenders, mortgage brokers, insurance people, whoever. We're always looking for articles to help keep the website fresh. So if anyone listening in would like to submit an article, just get in touch, and I'd love to talk with you about it.
That's great. And you're going to give all your contact information near the end of the call, and that way people can get in touch with you. Why don't you start, John, and tell us just a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background, and bring us up to speed.
Okay, I was born in Columbia a number of years ago, moved to Spartanburg in 1980, actually worked in local television for 23 years.
Wow.
Worked with my last television job over at South Carolina ETV, the small Spartanburg station of South Carolina ETV,
uh-huh.
And left there in June of 2003, deciding to move out on my own and did some research and decided that that real estate services and more specifically home inspection was something that I really wanted to do. I'd always been interested in real estate and property and had done a good bit of remodeling work, my house and other people's houses. I have turned my unfinished basement into a recording studio when we first built our house a few years ago, and that was a lot of fun. But
I bet that was.
Yeah. But anyway, so here we are, and back in March of this year, when Glenn Woodfin started the Spartanburg or the Foothills REIA group,
uh-huh.
I joined up primarily as as another business development stream, and it didn't take long before I was really itching to do some investing and learned an awful lot from people like you and all the other speakers at the meetings and the seminars and so forth. And so in early September, I bought my first investment property. It was a HUD foreclosure, and I've rehabbed it, and it's on the retail market right now in the slowest season of the year. So
wow, congratulations, though.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I really do.
That is great. You know, you mentioned a couple of important things. You mentioned, number one, that you said it's on the market in the slowest season of the year. However, you know, you can't look at that, because if you had said, oh, this is the slow season, we're not going to do anything, let's just hold off till spring, not only would you have missed that deal, but you may not have gotten to your first deal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that was one of the biggest messages that I've taken away so far from all of the great educational opportunities that the REIA and CREA groups have offered, is jump in. You know, the longer you sit and wait, the longer you sit and wait. So.
Well, you know, there's people that will, you know, just like tonight, I mean, they'll be on this call or be on other teleconference calls or listening to tapes or whatever, but you have to take that first step, you know?
Right, absolutely.
I tell you what, people say knowledge is power. That's a lie. The use of knowledge is what power is.
That's absolutely right.
You have
right.
to use it. It doesn't mean anything if you have a shelf full of tapes and books and CDs and videos and seminars, but they're sitting in the closet and you haven't done anything with them.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I like to share with people is to know and not to do is the same thing as to not know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, very well said.
Yeah, I mean, if you know how to do it and you know and you go out and learn, but you still don't do it, it's the same thing as not even knowing.
Right.
So you have to take action, and that's it's really neat. You know what's really neat, and we'll talk about this a little bit more. But what's really neat is when we go into our boot camps and our 1-day seminars and training events. And we have people that at the end of those that say, hey, I was really intimidated at first, but now I feel so comfortable and so confident, and it seems like there's just safety in numbers, where when you get a lot of people together and they're all excited about doing their first deal and they're learning how to structure it and do it the right way and make the right decisions and say no if it's not a good enough deal and make sure their first deal is a good deal, not just a first deal.
Yeah, you make a real good point, I think, Larry, about there being safety in numbers. And I would add to that continuity, because I know that just the repeated act of attending the meetings and attending the focus groups and the seminars and so forth and so on, it keeps you built up. It keeps you enthusiastic about all the opportunities that there are out there.
Absolutely. I've had people that have asked me before, how long do I have to keep coming to these RIA meetings? Well, my standard answer is until you start liking it.
Exactly. But another thing, too, is just the rank and file members of the groups, not necessarily people who present at the meetings and so forth, but just the rank and file members, and particularly the seasoned investors, are an incredible source of knowledge and information that
that
everybody should be ready to avail themselves of.
I'm a firm believer that a good idea doesn't care where it comes from.
Exactly.
You don't have to be sitting next to Lou Brown or Ron LeGrand or Barney Zick or whoever to pick up a good idea. I mean, don't get me wrong. These guys have great ideas, have great product, do awesome seminars, and but you can learn a lot just by finding out at your local RIA group, hey, who's the player? Who's buying 5 to 10 houses a month? Let me take them to lunch. And then you take your list of questions and you sit down, and 9 out of 10 of them will sit there and they'll just open up and tell you everything you ask them.
Oh, yeah, I'd say more like 9.5 out of 10. That's one thing that was really amazing to me is how willing everybody was to share the information that they have, even though a lot of times we find ourselves in competitive situations. You've still got people who have a certain camaraderie within the group and are genuinely interested in helping those of us who are newbies starting out.
Absolutely. That's why even at our boot camps, I mean, I don't mean this in a bad way, but everything that we teach at our boot camp, I could stand up there and teach it the whole time. Only because I've been exposed to it. That's the only reason. But
right.
We have 7, 8. In fact, I think in this one coming up in January at Myrtle Beach, we're going to have 9 different speakers at the boot camp on a tremendous amount of subjects. And these are people that specialize in certain areas, and they know very detailed specifics about what it takes to be successful in their particular niche or area. That's why I like to bring in other people, just like what we're doing here tonight. I'm a firm believer in education and learning, and learning as much as you can from as many people as you can, and then you come up with your own conclusion.
I think that's a great outlook.
It really is. It really is. It's really exciting. So I guess we've taken up enough time on that, huh?
Well, it's easy to get excited once you start talking.
Oh, it is, man. I love it. But tell us a little bit about home buyers and investors. We often hear that we should get a property inspected before we close a deal. Why should we do that? And can I do it myself, or can I get my rehab guy to do it, or tell us a little bit about that?
Well, starting off with what I call the traditional home buyer or the owner-occupant, a majority of those folks just really don't have the knowledge or training to know what to look for in terms of the condition of a property. A lot of people have never even been inside of a crawl space or even an attic in some situations. So for that person, for the owner-occupant buying the house to live in, this is the largest single purchase and investment of their life. And especially in the case of the owner-occupant, it's the place they're going to be coming home to every night, and so emotion can get caught up in the process of buying the home.
Right.
You know, Larry, as investors, we know one of the first things we learn is we should never fall in love with a property. But for the traditional home buyer, the owner-occupant, that sometimes can't be helped. And so that that objective and educated viewpoint of the condition of the property that a professional inspection can provide is going to be very valuable for that person. The person selling a home or an investor, especially a rehab for retail investor, there was a study in 2001 that found that 77% of buyers nationally and 80% of southern buyers got a professional inspection before closing the deal. So if you're selling your house or if you're investing in a house that you're going to turn around and flip or rehab and turn around and retail,
right,
it pays to know in advance what your buyer's inspector is going to find. Now, of course, there are plenty, particularly in the case of investors, there are plenty of people out there who do have the knowledge to make a pretty good assessment of a home's condition, particularly those with some years of experience. At the same time, it never hurts to have a second opinion. And quite often, I have been fortunate in attracting a good bit of business from the investment community. And quite frankly, what I hear is they just either don't have the time that they'd like to spend evaluating a property before they buy it, or else they just really don't find crawling around in a 24-inch crawl space to be a real good time. So that's kind of the angle from the investor's viewpoint.
Exactly. And you know what? You made a good point. In fact, the very first teleconference that I did, I had Mike Ivey, who is a friend of mine that does rehabs. He is a contractor and rehabs, I don't know, 10 or 15, 20 houses a year. But as soon as he gets the house fixed up and ready to go on the market, he gets a home inspection. So when he does get a buyer and the buyer, you know, starts talking about, well, you know, I need to have so-and-so look at this. Well, you know, you can rest assured because I have already had a home inspector come in and inspect the home. Here's what they found. Here's what I did to correct it. Now you will get a clean inspection if you have one done.
Right. And I think that you make an important point there, too. I'm really happy to hear that he's doing that. That's, in my experience, is pretty rare and kind of few and far between. Still, the buyer is always encouraged to get his or her own inspection because not everybody is going to be as ethical as the fellow you were talking about,
right.
And they may have an inspection performed, and then they may alter. You know, documents can be altered, and it's unfortunate, but it happens. And so just to maintain that kind of arm's length relationship, the buyer is always encouraged to get his or her own inspection. But I'm really happy to hear that Mike is doing that.
Exactly. Yeah, he is, and I think that's a great way to do it, especially if you're retailing a property, because the
mm-hmm.
retail market is a little different in the sense that you're looking at somebody that's going to live in the house, and they're going to be a little more maybe critical is, I don't know if that's the right term or not, but they're going to want to know every little thing.
They're going to be a lot more concerned because they're going to be spending time in the house.
Absolutely. They are.
It's where they're going to live. It's going to be home.
I remember whenever I bought my house back in the one we live in now, I bought it back in 96, I believe, May of 96.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had the inspection done, man, you guys find everything. I mean, we were, they noted that there was a small crack in the front walkway, about 3/4 inch high, that could be considered a trip hazard.
Absolutely. And that is, I'm glad you mentioned that, Larry, because that brings up what to me is the most essential aspect of an inspection, and that is safety. the very first thing that I look for, or rather the question that I'm asking myself before I start an inspection and all throughout the inspection is, could a child get hurt here?
Right.
And so a simple little thing like that, and it's, you know, it's probably not something that the seller is going to be sued for later if the buyer's child trips and scrapes his knee. But still, it's, you know, safety is the, should be the first and foremost consideration in any home inspection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Plus, you want to know what works and what doesn't.
Absolutely.
That's true.
No doubt.
Good. Tell us a little bit about being a professional home inspector. What is that? I mean, do you have to be licensed? Do you have to go to school? Or what kind of qualifications? You know, what are we looking,
right.
What are we looking for, and what is considered a? I mean, because anybody can come out and say, I inspect homes.
Right, exactly. In South Carolina is one of the few states in the country that requires, that has a licensing requirement.
Mm-hmm.
In order to become a professional home inspector and become licensed, you have to take a 40-hour course. You have to pass a state exam, and there are certain continuing education requirements as well. North Carolina is also a licensing state, but a majority of the states are not. There are also professional organizations that offer certifications and continuing education. The organization I belong to is called NACHI, the National Association of Certified Home Inspectors, NACHI.
Uh-huh.
And we'll talk, if we can, we'll talk a little more later about their website, because that's a great, great educational resource for people who are interested in things about the condition of the property that they're considering.
Exactly, exactly. Well, that's great. That's great. Now, and I'm sure that every state, because there's some people on the call here from other states as well, I'm sure every state does have their own qualifications, don't they?
Well, actually, there are only, and I would have to go back and check because I haven't looked, some states have passed legislation recently, but it's only a minority. Fewer than half of the states actually require licensing for home inspectors.
Wow.
So in South Carolina, that's a little bit of a reassurance for the person, or in North Carolina for the
uh-huh.
the client who's hiring the home inspector to do the inspection.
Wow. Now, I guess also some states will allow licensed contractors to.
That is, that's what I neglected to mention a minute ago. In South Carolina, you do not have to take the test if you are a licensed general contractor or residential builder.
Uh-huh.
You automatically qualify to do home inspections, but those are the only two exemptions to the requirement for training and for passing the test.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. That's great. Tell us a little bit about how long does an inspection normally take? Is that something you go out there and spend all day, or you prepare a report and all that, I know. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the average inspection is going to take 2 to 3 hours. My inspections typically take a little bit longer, depending on the age, general condition, features of the house. I might spend up to 5 or 6 hours on a 2,000-square-foot house, or even on a smaller house if it's very old or has a lot of damage and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
For myself personally, I very rarely book more than one inspection per day. I'm just more comfortable doing business that way.
Sure.
Some inspectors do book more than one a day, and that is not to suggest in the least that my inspection is necessarily better than anybody else's, but I do usually take more time than what you'll find with the average inspection.
Uh-huh.
Report formats and delivery are going to vary from one company and one inspector to the next. Some inspectors use checklists that are filled in by hand, delivered to the client immediately after the physical inspection on site.
Wow.
Other inspectors use laptops or PDAs to take their notes while they're actually going through the inspection, and they have portable printers, and they actually print the report on site
right there
right after the inspection. I use an online reporting service called Report Host, and in a typical inspection, I'll finish the physical inspection, go back over my notes, come back to the office, write up the report, and then file it online and email the client, usually that same evening, the address, the web address, URL of his or her specific report, and then deliver a hard copy the next day.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's neat. That is really good. And I'm actually on your site right now looking around.
I hope you're able to get in because my site was my ISP server was acting up a while ago.
No. I'm actually in and I'm looking around
Great.
In case there's anybody that would like to. Why don't you go ahead and give out the web address if they'd like? I mean, we'll do it again at the end, but in case some people
sure.
would like to kind of look at it.
Sure, absolutely. Assurance-south.com. In other words, the word assurance and then a hyphen, not an underscore, but a hyphen. Or dash, and south, S-O-U-T-H, .com is my website. And email is John, J-O-H-N, at assurance-south.com.
And you know what? I've noticed that, man, these inspection reports, you guys take a lot of pictures, don't you?
Yeah, some of us more than others. I have really been trying to rein myself in lately because printer ink is getting so expensive, but I typically tend to shoot pictures of even the most minute little problem or concern that we happen to notice, besides obviously, you know, cosmetics and that kind of thing, which we don't really concern ourselves with
sure.
as long as the cosmetic issue isn't an indication of another problem. But we put an awful lot of pictures in typically on my site. At the bottom of each page, there's a link to a sample report, which at this point in time probably needs to be updated. But it's kind of an overall flavor of what my reports include. And then most inspectors and most inspection companies now have websites where you can go on and look at their sample reports. And I'd encourage anybody who's considering an inspection to do that, just so you'll know in advance the kinds of issues and the thoroughness of that inspector's work and his report.
And what you're actually going to get.
Exactly, exactly.
Because yeah. you do not only the full report, but you also provide a summary, just a brief description of every area and what you found, right?
Right. Some people, want to cut straight to the chase. They don't care about the pictures. They want to see, they just want hard information. And so we take out all the pictures and include nothing but the concerns in the summary.
And that sounds like me.
Larry, that does sound like you.
I hear you. Yeah, just what's the bottom line?
Exactly.
Really. But, and I noticed there's like 51 different sections in your summary report of the different areas that you cover and can write a detailed description about.
Well, that's simply a summary of the various concerns and all that were that turned up during the inspection itself.
Right.
The inspection itself, the items that we inspect are what we call the major systems that make up the home: the exterior and grounds,
uh-huh.
the foundation, the structure, electrical, plumbing, HVAC, and of course the roof system.
Mm-hmm.
It's broken down. The inspection reports are broken down into those general categories, and then individual concerns in those categories are noted there.
Right. Well, tell me about when you get a call from somebody, whether it's a buyer or seller, am I able to be out there with you while that inspection is going on?
Absolutely encourage the client, whoever the client happens to be on site for the inspection. And at the client's, per the client's wishes, the agent and or the seller or the other party in the transaction are also, of course, welcome to be there. But the client, it's almost like a realtor's relationship with the client.
Right.
Whoever hires me is the person whose interests I am charged with looking out for, and the client has the option of inviting or not inviting his agent or the seller or whoever to the inspection itself. Very occasionally, a realtor will come and take part in the inspection, but realtors typically don't have the patience to hang around that long. And typically have other things to do. So quite often the realtor's task is simply to show up at the appointment time and unlock the house. So, but once again, that is entirely up to the client. But absolutely encourage the client to be there because the whole point of doing the inspection is to educate the client about what's going on and why this is a problem and why that isn't a problem.
Well, for the most part, the client is probably more than likely the buyer, right?
So typically, in most cases. Now, I have done seller's inspections, and they do come along. But,
like we were talking about Mike does earlier.
Exactly. But I'd say that a good 80-85% of the inspections that I've done have been buyer's inspections.
Well, now, does a buyer or your client have any responsibilities before the inspection?
They do. There's a fairly, I don't want to say limited, but there's a fairly well-defined scope to the typical standard home inspection.
Uh-huh.
And just for the sake of a definition, visual examination of the major systems that make up the home that we listed a minute ago. It's important to remember, Larry, that the standard inspection is a non-invasive inspection limited to readily accessible areas and only uses normal operational controls to test mechanical systems and appliances. There's one exception to that, and that is the dead front cover on the electrical service panel. That's typically removed to inspect inside the electrical panel, but nothing else gets taken apart. Basically, the inspector's job is observe and report.
Okay. So there's some areas that you can't get to or I guess can't reach or whatever also, right?
If an area is inaccessible, the inspector will simply note not accessible, not inspected. Now, I didn't answer your previous question completely. Responsibilities of the client, of course, there are some, but if he or she's using a realtor, it's a great opportunity to pass the buck for those responsibilities and let the realtor earn their commission. For the most thorough inspection, all utilities should be turned on and functional before the inspector arrives. And by functional, I mean that it's not enough to have the water turned on at the street. If there's a main shutoff inside the house, that should be turned on, as well as individual shutoffs for faucets, toilets. Same thing with the electrical. Not only should the meter be in place and the service turned on, but the main breaker and all circuit breakers in all the panels in the house should be turned on.
Uh-huh.
If there's a gas or oil furnace to be tested, those fuels should be available and turn on ready. Basically, the reason for all this is that the inspector's walking into the house for the very first time. He or she has no idea whether there's a bad TPR valve on the water heater or a leaky shutoff somewhere,
right,
a dangerous electrical condition or whatever. Very few inspectors will energize shutdown systems, even to the point of flipping circuit breakers that are turned off, because of safety and liability issues that are involved there. So that is a responsibility of the client. Now, this time of year, a lot of vacant properties have been winterized. So the client needs to be aware, the realtor should inform the client of this, that if the house is de-winterized for the purposes of inspection, the client's typically responsible for the cost of re-winterizing the house.
Which means draining everything.
Exactly, putting antifreeze in the drains, turning off the supply, water supply, and draining all of the faucets and toilets and so forth and so on. And that should be performed soon after the inspection unless the utilities are going to be left on so that the pipes don't get cold enough to freeze.
Exactly.
The client's also responsible for securing permission for the inspector to enter the property and to make arrangements for access, typically the realtor showing up to open the house at the time of the appointment for the inspection.
Right.
And all these responsibilities are typically outlined in the inspection agreement that the client signs before the actual inspection takes place.
Right. Now, let me ask you this question. A lot of the properties we buy are bank foreclosures.
Right.
We don't typically get the power turned on before we buy it.
Right.
You can still do a lot of inspection, just not the mechanical part of it.
Absolutely, yeah. It's obviously we want to be as thorough as we possibly can.
Uh-huh.
And if a particular utility isn't available and therefore not able to test a furnace or an electrical appliance or whatever, that is just noted in the report. Is basically left out, and we prefer not to do that. But then, you know, as long as the client, the investor, the buyer is aware that particular item has been excluded from the inspection, and they're or will be excluded from the inspection, and they're comfortable with that, then everything's fine.
Excellent. That's good. That's good information. Now, tell us about this. We've talked about a lot of the things that you do cover in an inspection. What are some things that are not included in an inspection?
Well, going back to what we said earlier, it is a visual, non-invasive inspection of the property. Now, we mentioned the consideration of the utilities already. It's important to note, Larry, that the home inspector is a generalist, not a specialist. So the report is typically not going to include a diagnosis of problems observed or a recommendation for action, but simply the observation of the problem itself. And for problems other than minor issues that the average person could take care of without much trouble, the inspector is typically going to recommend further evaluation and repair by a qualified specialist in whatever field that particular problem happened to occur, whether it's the HVAC, the electrical, or what have you. Probably easier to reiterate what the inspection does include, the visible areas, components, and equipment that's operable using normal controls. For instance, a standard inspection isn't going to report on a cracked heat exchanger that's not visible through the vents in the furnace cabinet. Most of them aren't. So the inspector will try to determine the age of the furnace, and if it's reaching the end of its what's thought of as its typical lifespan, he'll probably recommend evaluation by an HVAC specialist, even if the unit appears to be working properly at the time of inspection. So then it's up to the client to decide whether or not to follow that recommendation. Other things not included, obviously things that we can't see, an underground oil tank where the filler neck has been removed, cosmetic issues which don't appear to be the cause or result of a more serious problem.
But you're not really supposed to remove those filler necks from tanks in the ground, are you?
Well, the oil tanks are a whole other thing, and people need to be aware of the liability associated with them. You're not supposed to remove the filler necks, but I've seen it. Well, I've seen it three times that I know of because I was told that the tank was there. Otherwise, there would be no way to know.
Right. And I've heard people say that, you know, it's an old tank. You just cut the top off and fill it with sand and then cover it up.
Well,
I don't think that's a good idea, is it? You're not really supposed to do that, are you?
No, there are companies that, and sand is typically involved in decommissioning a tank, but it needs to be decommissioned by a professional. It needs to be professionally pumped out.
Right.
And then the sand added, and ideally the surrounding soil check to make sure that no leakage has already occurred, because that does become a huge liability issue. If either DHEC or the EPA discovers that a leak has occurred there, at the end of the day, the owner of record of the property at the time of discovery is ultimately responsible. Now, they may go after prior owners first, but at the end of the day, the current owner of record is going to be responsible for the cleanup, and that is not cheap.
But, you know, I can tell you this, too. My wife had a house that was for sale. After we got married, we fixed it up. We actually finished the basement and put it on the market, and it had one of those tanks. And the pipe was sticking out of the ground about a foot and a half high, you know, a few feet from the foundation. I mean, you can see it as plain as day, and several people said, oh, that's going to create a problem. You need to cut that off and fill it up and bury it. But I never did. I left it there. And you know what? We sold the house. It was never mentioned. The buyer's inspector never mentioned it that we're aware of. The lender never said anything about it, and it closed without a glitch.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I would suggest that maybe the inspector should have made mention of that. Just because they are such, because underground tanks can be such a liability with regard to leakage, but I'm glad it didn't. I'm glad you didn't try to hide the fact that it was there, and I'm glad the fact that it didn't impede your ability to sell the house.
Well, I figured, you know, worst thing that can happen is we have to take it out and have to remove it.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's just a part of life. We're going to have to deal with it. We're not going to try to hide something, you know.
And decommissioning a tank, an underground tank, is a lot cheaper than cleaning up one that's leaked. You're talking maybe $500, maybe $600 to have a tank professionally decommissioned if it's going to stay in the ground. Maybe a little more to have it dug up and taken off. But it's not something that's going to ruin a sale.
Now, are there companies out there that do that kind of work?
There are, and if anyone wants to get in touch with me, if they have more questions about that, I have one company specifically that I know of in the upstate that handles that. Of course, their online search would be a good way to turn those up. But quite often, a lot of oil companies will offer that service. So
that's good to know. I didn't know that, John.
So, yeah, some do, not all do, but you just have to look around and find them where you can. But
well,
they
worst
are
case,
out there.
They probably know somebody, you know, contact the oil company, and they
exactly.
If they don't do it, they probably know somebody that does.
Exactly.
You've talked about a lot of things that it does cover and a lot of things that it doesn't. What about some specialty type inspections? Like, I know you're not specifically looking for or doing a termite inspection, are you?
No, absolutely not. The standard home inspection should never be considered a substitute for a termite inspection. In South Carolina,
uh-huh.
an individual must be specifically licensed as a termite inspector, as in most states. Unlike home inspection, in most, if not all states, they require specific licensing to be qualified to issue a termite letter. Now, that said, any termite damage that's observed during the course of the inspection should be photographed and reported in the standard home inspection. But the absence of that observation in the report shouldn't be construed as the property is free from any current or prior infestation.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's good to know. But just remember, as an investor, termites are our friends.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because they're so scary.
You can fix the termite problem. It's the
exactly.
seller or the bank that doesn't want to have to deal with it.
Exactly.
So termites are your friends.
That's right.
That's true.
Words to live by.
Now, John, what about mold? Do you inspect for that, too?
I do not. Mold is tricky. There are many home inspection companies out now that are including mold analysis in their inspections, either
uh-huh.
as part of the inspection or as an add-on.
Uh-huh.
I'm not aware of any current licensing requirements in South Carolina regarding mold inspection. For that matter, you can even buy a do-it-yourself test kit for mold online. Now, Larry, in the inspection community, there's a fair amount of controversy about whether an inspector who's not specifically trained and certified in mold should be offering mold analysis.
Right.
Just because it might lead to a false sense of security on the part of the client. Again, standard inspection, visual inspection of readily accessible areas. So just like with termites, any mold that is observed during the inspection should be photographed and reported.
Uh-huh.
The standard inspection is probably not going to reveal mold that may exist inside ductwork or other areas that aren't visible during the inspection. Once again, we don't take things apart except for that electrical service panel. My personal opinion is that mold inspection and analysis is better left to those specifically trained and certified in that field. There are environmental services firms out there that specialize in issues like mold, and that is why I don't currently offer mold inspections. But at any rate, if the client does contract with a home inspection company for an inspection that includes mold inspection and or analysis, the client needs to read the fine print real carefully and ask specific questions about the scope of the mold inspection itself. Radon is another issue. Radon is kind of the mold of yesteryear because nowadays nobody seems to care much about radon,
uh-huh.
Which is really kind of ironic because there are several counties in the upstate that are hotspots on the EPA map
right.
for radon. I do offer radon inspections because radon test is much more cut and dry. And so if someone is concerned about that, I do offer that as an add-on to the standard inspection. So the EPA-compliant testing is very cut and dry.
Wow, that's good. Now, what about lead-based paint?
Lead-based paint. If the house you're buying was built before 1978, there's a possibility that the house has layers of lead-based paint, either probably not as the top layer, but quite possibly underneath,
mm-hmm.
and the client needs to be aware, and the inspector is responsible to inform the client if the house is known or appears to be built before 1978, then the inspector needs to inform the client of that possibility. There are a number of great publications on both lead-based paint, asbestos, as well as mold and radon and the other things we talked about available on the EPA's website. So that is a great resource for people who have concerns about those particular issues.
You know, and now with the lead-based paint laws, if a house is built was built prior to 1978, you have to either as a landlord or as a seller have to give the lead-based paint disclosure brochure.
A brochure that the EPA does publish. You're absolutely right, Larry. Absolutely right. And so that's, you know, that's something that that particularly an investor would want to be familiar with, but also someone who's going to live in the house. And again, the lead-based paint is typically not going to be a problem as long as it's covered up by another layer of paint and doesn't get disturbed.
Right.
The problem occurs when you go in and start sanding areas that may have lead-based paint that release that lead into the air,
mm-hmm.
Those dust particles that have that may contain lead into the air, and that starts causing our health problems that we worry about. Asbestos is kind of a similar situation. You know, a lot of the ceilings, blown ceilings before the 1980s, contained asbestos, as well as other building materials and insulating materials and so forth that contained
in the attic.
Asbestos. Possibly in the attic for much older houses, and that can be a concern. But for asbestos that is not friable, in other words, it's not readily crumbly,
uh-huh.
It's not likely to be disturbed in a way that that would release asbestos fibers into the air. It's typically not, it doesn't have to be a big concern. If it's painted over, sealed, and not accessible, for instance, for children to scratch at or whatever, typically doesn't have to be a concern, but definitely something to educate oneself about.
Right. Well, that's good information. That's good to know. What are some other examples of defects or things that you might be looking for or might find in an inspection?
We've mentioned earlier safety, and that, you know, that is job one. That's the first thing we're looking for. And once again, could a child be hurt in this house? Let me give you an example. I did a fairly large, nicer home in an older golf course community a couple of months ago. It had been real well maintained and had very few concerns, but the electric service panel was mounted on the exterior of the house, which in and of itself is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But when I opened the cover, the hinged cover for the service panel, the dead front cover was completely missing from the box. So the bus bars, wiring, all totally exposed.
Wow.
And within easy reach of a wandering child.
Wow.
The panel was also of a brand that's well known to be problematic, even when it is properly mounted and covered. So that, you know, that's a red flag that goes 50 feet in the air when you see something like that.
Uh-huh.
Other safety issues that you're looking for, them for handrails, guardrails with openings between the spindles or balusters that are large enough for a child's head to get stuck in, for instance.
Uh-huh.
Looking for receptacles near sinks or outside that aren't ground fault protected. Looking for folding attic stair units that aren't properly fastened to the framing. Ranges that are missing anti-tip brackets. And on for safety issues. And, of course, there are dozens and dozens and hundreds of general structural issues and water problems and so forth and so on.
Wow, that's a lot of information. That's a lot of things you have to be looking for, isn't it?
And again, I think for most home buyers and some of the inspection community, there are things that you get caught up in the process of buying the house, and you just don't happen to think to check for this one thing or that one thing. And quite often, the one thing that you didn't think to check for is what's going to come back to bite you.
Exactly. Now, what about, are you looking to see if the home meets certain building code requirements?
No. A home inspection is not a code inspection per se.
Uh-huh.
As an inspector, I do not quote building codes. I am required to be familiar with them. It's kind of an odd situation. Part of my education and training and continuing it reminds me is to stay up on what building codes currently exist.
Right.
But it's not like a county building inspector who goes in and checks for code compliance on a new construction or a major rebuild or something like that. Once again, familiar with it, but I'm not qualified to quote code.
Right, right. Well, that's still good to know that, though.
Yeah.
Is there such a thing as a house failing an inspection, or do you just give the report and let it kind of fall where it may?
Thank you for asking that question, Larry. There's a radio commercial up here that airs occasionally up here for a gutter company that says that water damage caused by faulty gutters is the, quote, number one reason that homes fail inspections, unquote. And every time I hear that, I want to throw a brick at the radio. Because it's very true that water damage caused by faulty gutters or poor installation or whatever is a very common defect. There is no such thing as pass or fail in a home inspection. The inspector's job, once again, the mantra is observe and report. Observe and report. If there is any kind of pass or fail involved, it's going to be on the part of the client once he or she gets the inspection report and decides on the course of action. There's another story, too, about that same house with the coverless breaker panel. A couple days after that inspection, I got a call from the electrician that my client had hired to further evaluate the panel. Of course, that was my recommendation, was to be immediately evaluated and repaired by a qualified specialist. And I had also mentioned that the panel was of a brand known to be problematic. And he asked me, the electrician asked me what I required with respect to the panel. And so I thanked him for bestowing me with authority I didn't have, because it's really not up to me to require anything. The home inspector's job is not to accept, reject, approve, disapprove, or require. The specific recommendation for a remedy to a concern lies with the specialist that the client hires, if the client follows the home inspector's recommendation to do so.
Right. Well, that's good. That is good to know. I bet probably what even that commercial is talking about failing an inspection is when a lender is requiring something to be done.
And that is another very good point. And occasionally an inspector will hear something like, "Well, I know there's a problem with the roof, but my lender might disallow my loan if that's in the inspection report. Can you leave that out?" The inspector, always wants to serve the client's best interest, but ethical considerations dictate that always report any defects observed during the inspection. In that particular case, what I'd probably agree to do is exclude the roof from the inspection entirely and note on the report that the roof wasn't inspected at the request of the client, and include language that means that this report does not fully comply with state standards of practice for home inspection. But still, if that's in the report, if the loan's contingent on the result of the inspection, the lender's going to want to know why the client wanted the roof excluded. So, we really want to keep everything clean and ethical and above board. And you want to
protect yourself, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, because you don't want to be responsible, if something comes up later about the roof. You want to let them know exactly why you did not inspect the roof, and it was at the client's request.
Right. I will not inspect something if the client asks me not to inspect it, but I will not purposely leave something out of a report for some ulterior motive like that.
I don't blame you. It's just not worth it.
No, absolutely not.
Now, what about this? A lot of the homes that we're starting to buy now are not that old, maybe only 5 to 10 years old, and they look like they're in pretty decent shape. Do we really need to get a home inspection?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, too, Larry, because believe it or not, I've got some more stories. Back in the summer, I did probably the most expensive house that I've ever done. It's a $500,000 house in Greenville.
Wow.
It was occupied and fully furnished at the time. Only 12 years old, generally looked to be very, very well maintained. As a matter of fact, the seller was on site supervising some maintenance work while I was there doing the inspection. It was in a very prestigious area. It was a very attractive home, and the crawl space was so wet that you could probably have stocked it with trout.
Wow.
There were powered vent fans running, sump pumps, so forth and so on, but there were some very real problems with water in the crawl space of that house. Another example, the four-year-old tract house I inspected that was on a slab foundation. It was a nice, quiet little neighborhood developed by a national builder. You'd recognize the name if I tell you what it was. They had gone in along the bank of a creek and put in retaining walls and then backfilled and built a row of slab houses. The only problem was that they obviously hadn't backfilled correctly against the retaining wall, exactly, because the house was literally breaking in half.
Mm.
A four-year-old house now, visible exterior cracks in the slab, perfectly adjacent to cracks inside that were opening up in the interior walls. I felt real sorry. It was a young woman who had bought the house new, young woman in her 20s, and she was looking for what she wanted from me was documentation by a certified inspector of the fact that, yes, there are some serious problems here, because she kept getting the runaround, and every time she would complain, they'd send over a drywall guy with some mud, and they'd plaster over the cracks that were opening up inside, and they'd just keep opening up and keep up, and the doors are starting to stick and all that stuff. So, just because a house is new or newer, not so old, just because it looks good, because, you know, until you started looking for the cracks, this house looked great, you know.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that you shouldn't have the house inspected by a professional inspector.
Now, let's talk about the other extreme. I also buy some houses that are pretty old. Like, you know, sometimes I get somebody on the phone, I say, now, when was your house built? In the 1900s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what are some things, and, you know, specific things you're looking for in houses like that?
Well, you know, you're talking about a lot of properties that are of interest to the investor community. Just like even newer houses are always going to have some issues that are going to trigger a flag in a home inspection, I tend to be pretty picky and report everything I find. But I also make it clear to the client that perspective is really important. A sagging floor in an 80-year-old house doesn't necessarily indicate foundation problems or other major damage, but might just be the result of some normal settlement of one pier over time. Just like people, houses develop health problems, get sick, have to be doctored from time to time, but the common cold is a lot more common than pneumonia.
Right.
But to get back to the specific question, things that we often find: outdated two-wire electrical systems, galvanized plumbing that's well past its expected lifespan, uneven settlement is a real concern. It can cause some serious foundation and structural problems. There are any number of things that can be wrong with older houses. But once again, something else to consider is that in a lot of cases, and I don't want to speak badly of modern builders or whatever, but in a lot of cases, you'll find that despite being 80 years old, some houses back then were constructed an awfully lot better than some of the construction you're on across today.
Yeah.
The house has been standing for 80 years without my permission, so, I should be so lucky to last that long. Yeah. So, once again, perspective's important. We want to look for those serious problems, but we want to know which problems are serious and which aren't. And that's what we're concentrating on in the older house. Something else that you see a lot of is the what we call the hairy homeowner, amateur attempts at repairing things. Pounding wedges into underneath support beams on top of foundation piers, that kind of thing. Things that need to be addressed, but aren't, the house isn't going to fall down tomorrow because of them. So it's a slightly different approach, but at the same time, the same approach is what we look for in newer constructions.
I guess this is one case where the old saying, they just don't build them like they used to, is really true, huh?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate. You're seeing things like, manufactured joists and so forth. Now, materials, I think even as much or more than the situation with the build quality in older homes, the materials were so much better because hardwoods were abundant and the materials themselves were just of better quality because we hadn't used up so many of the planter's resources at that time. So the new materials and so forth and construction, of course, are all related directly to economics and trying to maximize the economic return on the investment of building the house. And if they're done right, they can be just as good as an older, stouter construction, but it's important that they're done right. You know,
exactly.
go back to the example of the cracking slab house. So,
well, let me ask you this question, John. I'm a contractor, a licensed contractor in North and South Carolina as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when you want a full-blown inspection, but there's
right.
also times when maybe I just want to have somebody go out and check a few things. Maybe I can't get to, like, a narrow crawl space or an attic that you can't get into really well or something. Is that something that you can do? And what would the difference be in the price in something like that?
Well, you know, depending on the first of all, to answer your question, yes, that kind of thing is available. You know, I do it, other inspectors do it, particularly for our investor clients that we develop relationships with and we get to know. You know, one thing about inspectors working with investors is that investors are repeat business for home inspectors. The traditional owner-occupant buyer may buy a house and live in it for 15 or 20 years, and while I may get a few referrals from them, I'm not going to get any repeat business. Investors are constantly buying and selling, so they are repeat business for us. But to get back to the question, yes, we can do many inspections, inspect only specific components of the property at a reduced cost. You know, but the cost based entirely on how much work, you know, is actually entailed and how much time is involved. Yeah, those are available. Now, what we do in those cases in the inspection report is to note that at the client's request, once again, a full inspection was not performed, and so the inspection should not be considered in compliance with the state standards of practice. And then once again, as you said earlier, that basically is to protect the inspector. You know, why didn't you do a complete inspection of this house? Well, that's what we contracted for. So.
Right.
But, yeah, absolutely. And you know, I have my investor clients who tell me, you know, I want to go out. I want to be looking at houses. I want to be going out and making deals and so forth. I don't want to be crawling around in a crawl space, you know, fighting camel crickets and spider webs and everything else. So yeah, that's the service that we try to offer when it's requested.
Camel crickets. I never knew what those things were called, but I knew as soon as you said that exactly what it is.
Well, I just heard that term the first time myself. I always called them spider crickets.
Yeah.
But then someone told me that the correct name for them was camel cricket. So, but you know, it is kind of a weird feeling though to crawl inside of a crawl space and get halfway up in there and turn on the flashlight and shine on the wall and see, you know, 150, 200 of those guys just sitting there staring at you.
I know, it's funny.
Yeah,
it is funny. And I knew as soon as you said that exactly what you were talking about, because I've seen hundreds of them.
mm-hmm.
That is funny.
Yeah.
And I knew, I actually, you know, I wanted to ask that question for everybody listening, but I actually knew that you would do that because you've done that for me before in the past.
I have, and look forward to the opportunity to work with you again. And anyone who is interested in that kind of thing, we'll do everything we can to tailor an inspection to the client's specific wants or needs outside of, like we discussed before, doing something that might not be entirely ethical. We just, you know, full disclosure as to what was done and why it was done this way or why something was not done, and we're happy to provide the service that the clients need.
Wow. Let me ask you this. This is, I think, a very, I guess, a very important question. I've bought houses before or talked to sellers about houses, and they say, oh, I've already got an inspection. Now, and I understand that if I was selling a house and I would get one that, you know, I know that if the inspection comes up and says there's something needs to be done, that I would do it and, you know, and that would be the end of it. But should I rely on somebody else's inspection?
Well, you know, is human nature always 100% reliable?
Yeah.
Or 100% dependable? Unfortunately, that's not the case. And once again, the buyer is always recommended or always encouraged to get his or her own inspection. One thing that I will tell you about my company, Larry, is that I will decline to inspect the same house for both the buyer and the seller. There's no dual agency that I do in home inspection,
right,
just to avoid any appearance of a possible conflict of interest. So if I had done an inspection for you as a seller, and then you said, well, hey, John Edwards is a great inspector. You need to give him a call and have your inspection done by him. I would decline that inspection simply because you were already my client on that transaction.
Right. I'm with you. That makes sense. But you're going to inspect it the same regardless of who it is.
Absolutely. Yeah, the standards are very clear, and the things that we're looking for are not going to change, except possibly stylistically from one particular house to the next. So, we want to give as thorough an inspection within the standards of a standard home inspection as we can.
Now, what about this? I know some inspectors, and you included, also do remodeling work or are contractors and do remodeling. Tell us a little bit about that and what to kind of look for and expect when your inspector is the same one doing the work.
Well, the inspector shouldn't be the same one doing the work. According to South Carolina Standards of Practice, once again, an inspector must refrain from doing repair work on a property that he's inspected for a period of 12 months.
Uh-huh.
Now, it is permissible, for instance, if the client wants to retain the inspector as a consultant after the inspection and have the inspector kind of supervise whatever and sign off on whatever repairs are made,
uh-huh.
as long as the client has hired the contractors independently. The contractors don't have a business relationship with the inspector.
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing is permissible, but for the obvious conflict of interest reasons in general, the contractor or the contractor's company is forbidden from doing remodeling work on houses that that they've inspected for a period of 12 months.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I never really knew that.
Yeah. Well, once again, it's, you know, I could come in and tell you, well, you know, if you were not a knowledgeable investor, knowledgeable real estate professional, I could come in and tell you, Larry, that floor is going to need about $5,000 worth of work. There's an awful lot of rot in there. But I'll tell you what, since I did the inspection for you, I think I can pull it together for you for $3,500. You know, how does that sound to you? And, of course, you're going to be lapping that up. Great, I'm going to save a bunch of money because my inspector's doing my repairs, wherein the floor may actually need no repair or only, you know, a few hundred, $1,000 worth of repair. So
uh-huh.
that's the kind of possibility of appearance of a conflict of interest that those regulations are designed to prevent.
Uh-huh. Wow, that makes good sense. That really does. That's good information to know. I never did know that. Well, tell us a little bit about you, John. I know you do home inspections, but what else do you do?
Well, I've been branching out. Of course, we mentioned earlier that I've got my first rehab property on the retail market, and I am also starting to do some light remodeling work, both for investors and just the general public, although not people that I've done inspections for on that same property.
Right.
And I'm also moving into doing some protection and preservation work for REO properties for lenders, as well as doing, well, for some time I've been doing draw inspections. Something else that I've worked with a fantastic company called Financial Help Services with is doing draw inspections both for rehab loans and for new construction loans.
Yeah.
So any mortgage lenders or bankers that may be listening in on the call, that service is available in the upstate as well or in western North Carolina. So, feel free to get in touch on that.
That's great. That's great. Man, John, this has been a tremendous amount of information. The time just flies by.
And yet it doesn't seem to me like it was much information at all. So I hope there was something useful there that, that folks can take away.
It's been a tremendous amount. Why don't you tell me, how wide of an area do you actually cover?
Typically, the counties that make up upstate South Carolina for standard home inspections. I'm not currently licensed in North Carolina because, frankly, I just haven't had the time to go through the process yet.
Right.
I do offer because you're not required to be licensed to do draw inspections or protection preservation work. I do offer that in North Carolina as well as South Carolina. My general area service runs from about Cherokee County, maybe over into York County in South Carolina, on over to Pickens, Oconee, and Anderson.
Would you inspect one for me in York County?
Would I inspect one for you? Absolutely.
Okay, call me tomorrow, and I'll give you the address, and I'll meet you over there.
All right, that sounds great.
That I need to get you to inspect.
Okay, we'll definitely take care of that.
Why don't you give the people listening your contact information? And do you mind if people would maybe and there may be some people call you from even out of state, John. But and I know I know you're great to work with, and you've done inspections for us in the past. And you know, I'm going to get you to come up and do this one up in York. But you've done stuff for us in Gaffney and Spartanburg and around. But you wouldn't mind if people, even maybe out of state, would contact you just to ask you a few questions and that sort of thing, would you?
Absolutely not. And let me I'm absolutely happy to do that, Larry. And I also want to share, we mentioned earlier, a great educational resource on the website of the National Association of Certified Home Inspectors, NACHI, N-A-C-H-I. It's NACHI.org, an outstanding website with all kinds of information about inspections, about home construction, so forth and so on. And a great feature of that website is there's a public bulletin board where anyone can come in and ask questions that they may have about specific items, HVAC, electrical, plumbing, structural, roof, foundation, whatever, and have those questions answered by NACHI certified inspectors. So, you know, that's something that that I hope everybody will avail themselves of. Once again, it's NACHI, N-A-C-H-I, .org, National Association of Certified Home Inspectors.
Oh, and it's a great site. I'm on it now. I'm actually on the bulletin board right now. Yep. I was on the site. I saw your name listed there as an approved NACHI member.
Right.
And I'm actually, yeah, I mean, there's categories on the bulletin board under general announcements, state legislation, exterior, interior, electrical, HVAC, plumbing, structural, education, general tips, hardware, announcements. I mean, just a tremendous amount of information on the bulletin board. So it's a very active bulletin board.
And just like we talked about earlier with the investment community, that I'd found the investment community to be so willing to share information, you find the exact same thing with the NACHI certified inspectors who hang out on the NACHI bulletin board. Always very willing to try and help whenever they can. And especially if you have a question about a specific issue in a house and you can take a digital photograph, you can upload that to the bulletin board along with your post or your question. That'll be a great help in the inspectors having a look and maybe being able to give you some ideas of what the particular issue may entail. So once again, great resource, and I hope everybody will take advantage of it. My information, once again, the website assurance-south or assurance-south.com. Email is john@assurance-south.com, J-O-H-N. And my telephone number is 864-494-3026. And
say that
I'll
number
be,
again, if you will, to,
I will.
So everybody gets it.
I'll do it slowly. 864-494-3026.
Great. That is good. Now, what about an email? Did you give that out?
Yeah, it's john@assurancesouth.com, assurance-south.com. Remember to put the hyphen between assurance and south.
Right.
.com. And John is J-O-H-N.
And you have some great links on your website as well.
We try and keep those links updated, even though I'm kind of behind now. I need to go in. There are a number of other things that I've run across on the web that I'd like to link to. But yeah, that's something that we try and maintain when we can.
Take a minute and tell us about your investor's website that you came up with. And you're pretty much a computer guru. I was picking your brain the other day.
Let's don't go there. Let's don't say that I'm a computer guru, Larry.
Well, you are pretty good. I mean, you know, you've got this, you know, the, is it upstateinvestor.com?
Yeah. Well, first of all, as far as, you know, what I can do with a computer, I'm the kind of person that I'll beat my head against the wall long enough until I make a hole. And so that's, you know, that's kind of my approach to trying to do things online or create web pages, that kind of thing. I was going through a slow period several months ago and I thought it'd be a good service to put that up online and then maybe, look down the road as that being a revenue producing, site once I start offering paid advertising. And of course, as soon as I got the thing online, I got too busy to maintain it anymore, so the best I can do anymore is try and get in and update the articles and maintain the classifieds. But hopefully there will be some time in the future to keep it going. But it's, once again, it's self-service. If you have a property that you want to list, if you're looking for a property, if you have a work truck that you want to sell or just whatever. And once again, it's intended primarily for upstate South Carolina and western North Carolina, hence the name investor, upstateinvestor.com.
Uh-huh.
You know, anyone is welcome to go in and post away on the classifieds.
Yeah. That is great. That's really good to know. That's a good service that you're providing there.
Yeah, it was just something to do, and I hope people will take advantage of it. And once again, always looking for articles for ideas. If someone in a particular area of specialty in real estate is willing to submit an article to be considered for the site, I would really love to see them.
That's great. That's a good idea. That is a good idea. Wow. Well, John, I really appreciate having you on the call tonight. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been fun, Larry. It's been a great time. And, of course, you're one of the guys that I was talking about being so forthcoming, sharing information and so forth and so on. I want to thank you for that and for the opportunity to be on with you tonight.
Oh, absolutely. Well, before we go, I do want to take just a minute and tell people that are on the call about our upcoming boot camp. And it's going to be in Myrtle Beach, January 28th, 29th, and 30th. And it's $1,495. That includes two free nights at Myrtle Beach at the Landmark Resort Oceanfront. And we're also going to have Saturday a lunch and learn where we're going to pay for your lunch. And we're going to spend the lunch doing that with Q&A and a little extra. We're going to have nine different speakers. It's going to be myself. Wendy Sweet's going to be talking about creative financing strategies and understanding financing. Turk Akbay, who has been on the teleconference before, going to talk about putting systems and processes and procedures in place and goal setting, as well as Fred Hoffman, who has been down to spoke in Spartanburg and speaks around in a few different places. He owns right at a couple of hundred houses, and he's going to talk about his system and how he sets up his business and operates it, and he is extremely successful. We're going to have Gary Brevko, who is a good friend of mine that specializes in foreclosures, and that's what he does every month is buy foreclosures at the auction and pre-foreclosures. I'm going to have John Morrow, who has been on the teleconference before. This guy buys luxury homes. He makes a minimum of $200,000 a deal. And I just talked to him, and he's worked it out where he can come to the boot camp and talk and tell us about how he buys luxury homes. Then we're going to also have Roger Schwartz, who talks about commercial real estate and development. Another gentleman that's coming in that works with John Kale from Prism Financial, going to talk about how to finance a commercial deal. Then I'm going to have, I believe I'm going to be able to get Graham Treacle, who is now becoming a national speaker, and going to talk about short sales. So it's just a tremendous amount of information. Not only do you get 3 days of intense training, I'm going to make live phone calls right on the spot, negotiating deals right in front of everybody. We're going to talk about every conceivable method to find properties, how to manage your properties, all the forms and documents. You get a CD with 58 forms and documents on it, a 428-page manual to go along with it, and you get a copy of the live phone calls. And when you sign up, we also throw in the Insider's Guide to Financing for Investors kind of as a primer to get you ready for the boot camp. That's a product that we sell for $400, $395. And we're throwing it in as well. So if anybody's on the call, would like to sign up, I'll be at the office for the next little bit, probably 20 or 30 minutes, working on some things on the computer here. You can call us. Actually, I have a new toll-free number, John, and I have it. It's 877-LARRY-GOINS. Of course, you don't need all the letters, but it's 877-LARRY-GO. So I wish I knew what that number was. But yeah, you can punch it in.
Well,
so
that makes it easy.
If anybody would like to call and sign up for that, we have about 22 or 24 seats left, something like that. We can only take about 55 people, I believe it is. But we have about 22 or 24 seats left. I think there might have been one or two people today called in. So if anybody has an interest in that or even any questions about it, please feel free to give me a call, and we'll be glad to get you signed up for that as well. So with that, John, I really appreciate you having you on. And seriously, if you will give me a call at the office tomorrow, I'll give you the address of that property, and I can meet you over there, and we can go out and I'd like to walk through it with you to when you do the inspection.
And you just gave me an opportunity to mention something that I have completely neglected to mention throughout the entire teleconference, and that is that that I do offer an investor discount.
Oh, an investor discount.
Absolutely.
So excellent.
I'm glad I've just happened to think of that during the call. But,
yeah, that's an important thing, John.
Yeah, the money thing is something we want to kind of keep in mind, isn't it, Larry?
You don't want to forget that. You don't want to forget that, yeah, because we are investors and we are tight, right?
Oh, yeah. We absolutely are.
Well, John, thanks again. I really do appreciate it. Look forward to working with you more in the future. And hope everybody on the call has a great night. And be sure in next week when you call in, we're going to have Donna Bauer, who is a national speaker. She's going to be at Metroline Rhea in January, and she is known as the Note Lady. She's going to be talking about buying and selling discounted mortgages, and she is a national speaker, author, trainer, and investor, and she'll be on the teleconference January the 5th, I guess it is. January the 5th. She'll be on our call next week. So everybody look forward to that, and thanks so much for calling in. And, John, you have a great night.
And you too, and I'd also like to thank everybody for calling in, Larry.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Larry Goins, and I would like to thank you for listening to this audio program. I would also like to remind you to please visit our website at www.larrygoins.com for other information, as well as we have a link for freebies. We have articles that you can read. I would like to share with you that we also offer one-day training events for basic real estate investing, and we also have three-day boot camps, as well as the boot camp in a box, which contains the complete three-day boot camp on audio CD as well as DVD video. Please visit our website for the location and schedule of our one-day and three-day boot camps coming up. We also have a home study course called The Complete Insider's Guide to Financing for Investors, which consists of over 500 pages in the manual and 10 audio CDs, as well as 2 forms discs and other products and services as well. We also offer personal coaching and mentoring, so whatever your needs may be, please feel free to give us a call. If you are a real estate group, investor association, mortgage company owner, or other organization and would like to have either myself or Wendy Sweet or Leon Humphrey speak at your group about real estate and finance and investing, please feel free to give us a call. Our direct office number is 803-831-0056. I am at extension 304. Wendy Sweet is 310. I'd also like to remind you that we also offer traditional financing as well as hard money and rehab loans for investors. Please visit our website there at www.financialhelpservices.com. Thank you very much for your business. We sincerely appreciate it. And please remember, our mission is to put people and principles in front of profits. When we do that, everybody profits. Thank you and have a great day.